We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Oh, I've got some really good audio that I have not gotten to this afternoon. Some of it is from my friends. I feel like I can call them my friends, Chad and JT. Aren't they? They're friends of ours, Dave.
Of course they are, yeah.
Chad and JT are bros. And do you want to describe who Chad and JT are?
Well, they're really California surfer guys who go around to city council meetings and kind of plead their case for usually ridiculous things.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be fair to say that they punk city council to a certain extent?
And they're experts.
Yeah, so they get up there in front of city council meetings or county council meetings, and the people, because there's a process that you go through, you know, in order to speak at these things. You have to fill out paperwork or whatever. And in the St. Louis County situation from last year during COVID, we had a little fun with that, you might remember,
sure.
Because they couldn't have people in person. So they had to read some of the things into the record that people would send via email. But we love Chad and JT, and they've kind of worn out their welcome in California, and they've moved on to Las Vegas.
Yep.
So we have some, if you've never heard these guys, I'm telling you, you've got to hear Chad and TT, and that's Chad and JT, and that's coming up here in a couple of minutes. The other thing that I want to mention is Ross Hunt. Ross is a political consultant down in Dallas, and he wrote a piece last week that caught my attention. I spoke with him a little bit last week, too, and we set up this interview, Fighting Critical Race Theory, One Door at a Time. I posted this on the Facebook page for the Rockwood School District parents that I'm a member, and I said this on Friday. I said, Ross is going to be a guest on my show. This is one of the best pieces I've read about CRT and what you can do to combat it. And there are very specific things in this piece, and he will outline them in the conversation at 525 that I hope people listen to and heed the advice on. So that's coming up. Plus, an audio cut of the day. More fascinating details now in a new charge in the Pamela Hupp case. She's, of course, serving a life sentence for killing a man in 2016. She's now been charged in the death of Elizabeth Betsy Faria. You might remember some of the details of this case. And the Lincoln County prosecuting attorney, Mike Wood, is with me on the phone to sort of outline some of these new charges. Michael, how are you?
I'm good, Mark. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. So this thing kind of, you know, some of the details we've known before gets a little crazier. And now new charges, new murder charges from your office, right?
New charges from our office. But even people looking from the outside in probably could see that there was a really great case, a circumstantial case that we had against Pam Hupp. And so once Sheriff Harrell was elected just about 6 months ago, he worked diligently to put all of his best investigators on it. They came to us, and we had something ready to go within 6 months. And if you have a chance to look at the charges and look at the probable cause statement, it sets together a very compelling case, one that's undeniable, at least in our eyes. And so we're pleased that we were able to get some resolution on that even 10 years down the road. We're almost at the 10-year point.
So there's, and you have to help me with some of the details because I've forgotten them, but you came in and ordered, I know, in sort of association with all this, and you mentioned the sheriff, an investigation into some of the things that have happened in the past where there might have been some funny business, right?
Absolutely. So in the course of our investigation into the death of Betsy Faria, we had some very concerning information that came forward regarding some officers who came forward and said they had been asked to lie on the stand. We had some documents that came to light that would have created what is commonly referred to as a destruction order that would have destroyed all of the physical evidence. So we, you know, these are very disturbing things to hear. I'm not making the leap that anything actually criminal happened, but the potential certainly is there. And I think for us to establish faith in our justice system and for the citizens to have faith in what we're trying to do here, We need to look into it. We need to look into it aggressively. And whatever the findings are, we're willing to produce those to anybody who's willing to take a look
at
it.
Because the original allegation was that Russell Freeh, the husband of Betsy Freeh, was the murderer, and that's how that case went forward. I can't remember. Was he convicted of that, and then it was thrown out? I can't remember all the details.
Right. So he was convicted in the first trial.
Right.
And then the Court of Appeals sent it back in record time. And so his attorneys opted for a bench trial. It was a judge from the city of St. Louis, I believe it was Judge Omer, had heard the second trial. And he had even made some comments that the investigation was disturbing and had more questions than answers. So he was twice tried, once convicted and then once acquitted. I can confidently tell you that after his acquittal, no one here in Lincoln County was even interested in taking a look at anybody else, which is disturbing in and of itself. So we made it our platform coming in with our campaign that we promised we would take a look at it, and we did. And so, and this is what we found.
And so Pamela Hupp is convicted of killing Mr. Gumpenberger, but that murder, if I understand it correctly, was all kind of in an effort to throw shade away from investigators when it came to this actual murder. Wasn't that part of it?
That's our approach. Our belief is that she then murdered Louis Gumpenberger in order to deflect attention from herself as a suspect in this case, because shortly after Russell Freeh was acquitted is when you see Pam Hupp taking action in St. Charles to try to solicit somebody to participate in what she staged as this particular killing. I mean, the facts are very salacious when you look into them, too much to get into now, but she definitely killed Louis Gumpenberger in an effort to prevent herself from being considered as a suspect in this case here.
Now, her sentence right now life in prison for that?
It's life without, yes.
Okay, so then one obvious question would be, well, Mike, why would you go forward with a case like this if she's already in prison for life? I know you have an answer to that, but I have to ask it.
Listen, I completely understand, and I hope that this answer makes sense. That the level of infamy that surrounds this case has been a dark cloud that has quite literally hung over Lincoln County for the past decade. And when people think about law enforcement and when they think about needing to contact the police, when they think of any of that stuff, the court system, they need to have faith that the system will work. When the right people are in place, the right people will do the right thing. And I'll tell you about doing the right thing is that it's not easy. It's not always the easy way, but it's the right way. It's the right thing to do, even if it's, what may seem to us like, so what? When we talk about words like justice and seeking justice, it's not just a word we talk about. It's something that we have to do. It's action that we have to take. And I firmly believe that. And I believe that's a very compelling argument that I can make to voters here as to why we're doing what we're doing.
But obviously the question would be there's a fair amount of resources go into this effort, right?
Yes. But you know what, Mark, that's my job. And that's what people expect us to do. That's what I was sworn in to do. And we plan on seeing it through.
Does it make it, maybe this is a rhetorical question, Mike, but is it more difficult to do all this when you have this interest from Dateline and from Hollywood? And obviously, you mentioned there's salacious details. This is a sexy story in a weird, deranged way, but that has to make your job more challenging, I'm guessing.
It will. We anticipate that motions for change of venue will occur. We often joke about where our jury pool is going to be pulled from. Obviously, is it going to come from the Springfield area, Cape Girardeau area, where we can find enough people who can be brought in as jurors who haven't heard so much about this case that they've made up their minds as to guilt or innocence? It won't make it easy, but I certainly understand why they report on it, because you can't make up you can't make up the facts surrounding what occurred with this case.
And you have decided also, just for confirmation, this will be a death penalty case?
Yes, this will be a death penalty case. I think during today's press conference, we were clear that the level of depravity associated with it, the fact that she murdered her friend, mutilated the body, staged it, testified against an innocent man, and then later killed someone else all in one giant conspiracy is depraved.
Yeah, I happen to still believe in the death penalty, and I happen to believe that this is a very, very good fit for the death penalty.
Right. Yeah. If you're a proponent of the death penalty at all, this would be the perfect example of when to use it, in my opinion.
Yep, I'm with you, Mike. All right, hey, I appreciate coming on here and giving us some details here. Obviously, this is going to move forward, and we'll see what else comes of the investigation as well. Michael Wood, who is the Lincoln County prosecutor. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it very much.
Mark, appreciate it.
Take care. The whole thing is fascinating. It really is, that whole case. And I think he'll have some luck finding jurors, because as salacious as it is and as much coverage as it's gotten here in St. Louis, I think for most people, if you'd say, hey, do you remember the Pamela Hupp case, they would know some of the details. But because it goes back for such a long period, they'll be able to find some people who have not heard all the details enough to get a conviction. All right, Dave, let's guide people into Chad and JT here on a Monday afternoon, just because I love these guys so much. They've been a very important part of the show when we discovered them many years ago, and they've been doing this for a while. They go and they sort of, I described it this way, they punk city councils. And usually the people, the elected members in the audience, when they hear this diatribe or they hear them given a bit of a spiel, they don't know what to think.
Right.
Because they think it's real, or they don't know that it's a setup, or these guys are kind of putting them on. So in this particular case, what are they lobbying for? Because they go before these boards and they're asking for something, right? In this case, Dave, what are they asking for?
Well, I think they wore out their welcome in California. They moved on to Las Vegas, and now they're lobbying for recognition of platonic bro love.
Why wouldn't you want that? This
of
is
course.
Chad making his case.
My name is Chad Kroger. This is my dog, JT, and we're stoked to be here in Vegas. We just came from the Cosmo pool. And
wait a second. Does he actually have a dog named JT, or is he just saying, oh, I see. This is my dog. See, this is how unhip I am.
Massive revelation. This past year was nuts. And while it tried to bring many of us down, there were some pretty massive silver linens that came out of it. COVID brought a ton of people together. Ross and Shelby got married, Trevor and Lauren, Ass Clown and Lauren. It's a different Lauren. And we were stoked to be virtual groomsmen at all three weddings. But COVID also brought two other people together. Us. And the desire to make it legal crossed our minds, but a major snafu is that the government does not recognize platonic love between two bros. But JT is my soulmate. The depth of our love is equal to any other couple. And we've been through stuff together. You know, we've had our losses and our fights.
I think he's making a pretty strong case here for why they believe that the city council in Las Vegas should allow for these relationships.
Like the time he finished a puzzle I had been working on without me. Yeah, we got past it and ended up crushing a 1,000-piece Charles Wysoski together while getting hammered. It was really sick. And yeah, okay, so the romantic part is not really there despite our most sincere effort. So I'm here, counsel, to ask you to formally recognize the love between us. And I'm going to be straight up. We want to be legally bonded as bros.
He makes a pretty strong, don't you think Chad makes a strong legal case for why this should be allowed?
You can't argue with the logic.
As bros.
My name is Chad Kroger.
Damn, the same. Dave, I'm still getting used to this thing here, and I didn't double click.
And while we may just be two bros, should we not be offered the same protections that your standard issue couple gets? Also, we got pretty ripped on taxes this year, and our dads had to bail us out. We didn't realize that you actually have to pay them.
Did he say that their dads had to bail them out?
That's correct. Okay. Yep.
But we heard from our buddy who's huge in crypto, JSAS, that you actually get some really dank benefits from legal unions. So, and also we've been roomies for like a decade, and so, but the government still sees us as individuals. So I'm here to say that we are a team, we are a unit, and we are a couple. And we want all the benefits that go to other couples so we don't have to get screwed again by Uncle Sam and have to cancel yet another trip to Bali. So, yeah. Let's support love of all kinds.
I think what they're saying here is why do we discriminate in the tax code against people like Chad and JT, or just bros who truly love each other? Why shouldn't they be afforded some of the tax benefits that the rest of us get because they're bros, right? I think that's what he's saying. Now, JT has to make his case.
Our relationship is kind and patient and shredded. And that's what I want in a partner. And I think a dank friendship like that deserves the same recognition and benefits that any other married couple would get. It's crazy to do 33 cycles around the sun and come to realize this stuff, but we realized it. We figured it out. You know, we found love. We found love. Yellow diamonds in the sky. We were standing side by side as your shadow crosses mine. what it takes to feel alive. But I can't deny. But I've got to let it go.
I think he's doing a pretty good job here.
We found
song,
love in a hopeless place.
Was there any indication? Did the city council in Las Vegas rule on their motion by any chance?
I think they thanked them for speaking.
It's so funny to see the reaction, because a lot of times when this happens, it's just during the course of a regular meeting, and then they get up there and they do this, and they're supposed to have whatever it is, 90 seconds to have their piece. And typically, I mean, I've said this before, I've covered city council meetings over the course of my so-called journalism career. It's one of the most torturous things that you'll ever have to go to as a reporter.
Wouldn't you love Chad and JT to speak?
I'm telling you, if I were sitting there, and luckily I didn't do a lot of this, but in the 80s when I was in Columbia, Missouri, I was covering planning and zoning meetings and stupid stuff like that. If somebody like Chad and JT came up, that would have been a gift from the broadcaster, the news gods. There's no doubt about that. All right, I want to cover a couple more things before we get to Ross Hunt on CRT, and he's going to be great here in a second. Stephen A. Smith got himself, is he in a little trouble or not?
A little bit, yeah, I guess. It's,
well, okay. So
it's being reported, at
least. He's kind of annoying anyway. I'm just going to say that on ESPN. But we were talking with Frank about the All-Star game tonight. And one of the big stories of the All-Star game, the Home Run Derby is tonight. And Ohtani, of course, is the big star of this All-Star game. He's not only a guy that can crush home runs, probably will win the Derby tonight, but he's also a starting pitcher.
Yeah.
It's pretty unusual to have not only a pitcher, well, it's unique, you would say, even in St. Louis with Adam Wainwright and his ability at the plate, that's very rare. It's unique with pitchers, right, because they don't hit very often. So is his emergence good for baseball? That's one of the questions that was up on ESPN's First Take. But Max Kellerman and Stephen Smith got into a discussion here, and Stephen Smith happens to think that the fact that Ohtani has to use an interpreter, we have KK here on the Cardinals, that has that need to, is bad for baseball.
Baseball was dying in the 90s. What saved it? It was the home run competition between Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa. Now, obviously, Sammy Sosa, we learned later during his testimony on Capitol Hill that suddenly he needed an interpreter. You know, baseball being very, very good to him. You know what I'm saying? That wasn't enough. He needed an interpreter.
All right, so you remember that moment. He didn't need an interpreter until that question came up. So valid point there for Mr. Smith, probably.
To speak for him when he was on Capitol Hill. Certainly didn't need that when he was smacking those home runs. But Mark McGwire basically helped save baseball because you had a dude that you could put on Wheaties boxes, all right, that could ingratiate himself with the younger generations out there and had America transfixed on the sport of Major League Baseball. What I'm saying to you is that's not the case. That's all I mean by that. I'm not taking anything away from Ohtani. I know what he's doing on the field. I know it's nothing short of spectacular. And I understand that baseball is an international sport itself in terms of participation. But when you talk about an audience gravitating to the tube or to the ballpark to actually watch you,
here it is,
okay? I don't think it helps that the number one face is a dude that needs an interpreter so you can understand what the hell he's saying in this country.
Okay, now, if Max Kellerman said that, or a white dude said that, that would automatically get you canceled, right?
Oh, you'd be off TV.
But is there a point there? Is there a valid point that Stephen A. Smith has? Because there probably is, he went on.
You know, in other sports, Max, like basketball, you notice, you know, Dirk Nowitzki was German and Manu Ginobili and others were from other places. And guess what, Max? They spoke fluent English. You understood what they were saying when somebody was interviewing them. They didn't need an interpreter. It goes a long way. For some reason, with Major League Baseball, you got these guys that need those interpreters. And I think that compromises the ability for them to ingratiate themselves with the American public.
All right, so did you see social media react to this? Of course, you have Stephen A. Smith isn't going to watch because Ohtani needs an interpreter while being awesome at baseball. Stephen A. Smith is part of the problem. Stephen A. Smith saying that Ohtani, responsible for the 10th highest viewed regular season games this year and what will likely be the most watched home run derby ever, we'll have to see on that, shouldn't be considered as a face of baseball because he needs an interpreter. Kindly piss off. I don't know if it brings fewer people to the game or not, or if it turns you out. His point was, Dave, if you listen to the whole interview, is that he thinks that that does a disservice to baseball and it hurts younger audiences. It would make them less likely to tune in. Is that basically part of
so.
His point?
And Stephen A. did issue an apology as
of course he did, because he has to issue an apology.
6 minutes ago.
Doesn't matter what you say. Doesn't matter if you're right. And I think that he was dancing around the edges here, being right about a couple of different things. So he's now apologized.
Yeah, he said, "Let me apologize right now. As I'm watching things unfold, let me say that I never intended to offend any community, particularly Asian community, and especially Shohei Ohtani himself. As an African-American keenly aware of the damage stereotyping has done to many in this country, it should have been elevated my sensitivities even more. Based on my words, I failed in that regard, and it's on me and me alone. Ohtani is one of the brightest stars in all sports. He is making a difference as it pertains to inclusiveness and leadership. I should have embraced that in my comments. Instead, I screwed up."
Okay. Meantime, a video has resurfaced of Ohtani. Have you seen this?
No.
Accepting his 2018 American League Rookie of the Year award entirely in English.
No kidding.
Yes, entirely in English. So it's a two-minute speech completely in English. It's at the Baseball Writers of Association of America dinner in January of 2019. The one thing, this is always a difficult thing to talk about, because I understand that even with KK, there was something that happened a couple of nights ago that I saw that was interesting. There was, I think Yadi was catching that night. He goes out. There didn't need to be a mound visit. KK didn't seemingly need the interpreter and was waving him off. Did you see this when this was happening or not?
A little bit, yeah. So, there's always some miscommunication there.
But then there was some confusion,
right,
I think, by the umpires. Next thing you know, you got Maddox out there and the interpreter's out there, and seemingly it didn't even need to happen. I don't know. But I do think, and I could say this, I'm sure I'm going to be accused of racism or bigotry or whatever, it never has made a whole lot of sense to me that you have people that have been in this country for a long, long time, and there's been an effort. I mean, I think they use Mariano Rivera as an example of someone who wants to, you want to use the word assimilation? This is what I think a lot of people hope that immigrants do, is they become part of the culture, they assimilate, they learn the language. In this particular case, is his talent, and I mean, the numbers on this guy right now are just unbelievable. Is that going to keep people from watching baseball? I don't think so. I think there's enough of a fascination with this guy right now, and apparently he has some ability with English. A lot of times, I will say this, that you have these players who are very nervous speaking to reporters, and you know, they don't want to say something wrong, which is one of the reasons that they ask for their interpreters. Now, when they're on the field, they want to make sure that everything is communicated accurately. So, interesting that he apologized. You know, Dave, you know this. If it was anyone else at ESPN, they'd probably be fired.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, they'd be canceled. 527. Do not miss Ross Hunt on Critical Race Theory. Coming up next.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome back. We have an audio cut of the day still to come before the end of the hour. I mentioned this last week, a piece that I really liked, Fighting Critical Race Theory, One Door at a Time. And Ross Hunt is with me this afternoon. He is a political consultant down in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Ross, how are you? Welcome to 97.1 FM Talk.
I'm doing great, Mark. Thanks for having me on to talk about this really important issue.
Well, I will say this. We haven't done this interview yet, so maybe I'll change my mind at the end. You better be good. Don't suck, Ross. But I've had a lot of people come on and talk about critical race theory, and this is one of the best pieces that I've read, and it's very important. What I did the other day, and hopefully I've got some folks listening this afternoon, in my school district, we've had a little bit of a CRT issue in the Rockwood School District here in St. Louis, and I put this on the parents' board for the Rockwood School District because those parents are passionate and active, and I said this is a great, great guidebook to do things the right way to fight back about what's going on. So congratulations on that. But I want you to give a little background here, because this happened down in your neck of the woods in Texas. So give the background of what happened in Southlake, Texas.
That's right. So it all started back in Southlake, Texas, which is a suburb of DFW, in 2020. And it started the way that it started in a lot of places. So there was controversy over a video of some teenagers singing along to a rap song. And then suddenly the administration of the school district, unbeknownst to all the parents, started to try to put into place this cultural competence action plan. And they put into place all of these different administrative procedures. They really just tried to take over the school and put in place all kinds of procedures and curriculum from critical race that we've seen going in school districts across the country. And, you know, a lot of your guests have talked about this before. I think one of the things I wanted to highlight in the piece that I wrote, American Mind, is that it really is possible to push back against this if you have the right pieces of organization. And the thing that really set Southlake apart is how they responded to this. They responded with passion, they responded with prudence, they responded with organization. And they followed a couple of key steps to put together a successful political operation to go along with all of that kind of organic grassroots passion. And so if there's one thing for your listeners to take away from this show today, it's that this issue of critical race theory isn't just a scary issue that's a threat to, you know, our kids and our culture and our country's values. But it's an issue where conservatives can and are winning across the country so long as they use the right techniques and tactics.
And that's what I want to focus on, and that's why this is important. I think the most important part of your piece is where you say find better people, because I've said this for years, Ross, just about congressional races or whatever races. And we have a good example here in Todd Akin in Missouri. And I don't know if you know what happened in that Senate race many years ago. But if you don't find good candidates, if you find fringy candidates, you are not going to win this fight. And I want you
That's
to explain.
Right.
Yeah, I want you to explain what happened in this school district, because these two, Hannah Smith and Cameron Bryan, these were these two school board candidates, but they were probably eminently qualified even for a role in Congress. Right. These were people
That's
with
right.
great resumes.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you can only make lemonade out of lemons, and if you want to make a really high quality elixir, you need some high quality ingredients,
right.
And that's what we had in Hannah Smith and Cam Bryan. You know, Hannah Smith clerked for Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito. Cam Bryan is the president of the North Texas Football League, and both of them extremely involved in the community. The key is to be really embedded in your community and really in touch with its values. In some communities, that might mean clerking for Alito. In other communities, that might mean serving in your local church, you know, being part of your local Knights of Columbus. It might be, you know, being part of the head of your local PTA or football league. So there are a lot of different ways to connect it, but you have to have that authentic connection to candidates. You have to be passionate, but you also have to be the sort of person that people can look up to as a force for organization. That's the first step. The second step is to take up some of the sharp tools of modern campaigning. They've invented over the course of the past couple of years. You have to build a real grassroots base. And so that's what Hannah and Cam did together with a political action committee that was formed. They reached out, and they didn't just come people to show up to the hearings that they had for the school board. They organized it. They called people. They mined voter lists and
right.
they used voter models to identify the most likely activists. And they systematically activated the whole electorate of Southlake. We saw amazing turnout. You know, normally, independent voters who are not our sort of party, hardcore party activists, normally make up only 17% of turnout in these low turnout school board elections that happen in the middle of the year in May, when everyone's asleep in the summer. But this May, independent turnout surged to over 35% of those who voted. We had an unprecedented surge of interest. And that is all a result of systematic, deliberate, smart political campaign.
And that's so important. And one of the things, and I know you highlight this, Ross, in the piece, that makes this difficult, and I don't know that this is completely accidental, but, you know, you have people that want to vote in the midterm elections or a presidential election. These school board races, I've said this for decades. These school board races are perhaps more important, and they have more of a direct impact on your life than some
Absolutely.
Of these other things that we vote on. And they're kind of hidden elections that people don't pay attention to, and you see the incumbents with their signs out, and you assume, okay, they're going to win again. But the dynamic
right.
can yeah. change, but it has to change with a formulated plan. That's why I think this is so important.
Yeah, and what people are coming to realize is that the tools that you talked about earlier that are used by congressional campaigns and presidential campaigns, voter targeting, paid door-to-door canvassing, direct mail pieces, digital advertising, it used to be that only top-of-the-ticket campaigns and federal campaigns and really expensive state campaigns could afford these things. But one of the things that's happened really just over the course of the past couple of years is that it has become possible for smaller campaigns to afford these things because of different innovations in the way that we're doing campaigns. And people on the right have started to realize this. And you know, we've started to organize political action committees, we've started to organize campaigns that use all these same advanced tools to target people on a very, very deliberate level. And it's what we need to do because the other side is extremely organized inside the administration of their schools. They're great at running conspiracies, which is really what they are, inside these school boards and administrations to try to get this corrosive ideology into our schools, into our kids' curricula. And what they're not actually as good at yet is campaigning in a systematic and disciplined way down ballot. And so we've actually been beating them on the ground just by using, you know, because we're in the right, first of all, and because Americans are, as a whole are on our side and are against this horrible ideology. We've also been beating them because we've been campaigning smarter and harder and more effectively. And that is one of the things that's most heartening about this chapter in sort of political history that's come out of nowhere, is that this is really an opportunity for all of us to push back against critical race theory, but also to show that the left doesn't always have to be the one who are leading the charge when it comes to figuring out new campaign tactics for down ballot races.
Ross Hunt with me. He wrote about critical race theory in The American Mind. He is a political consultant down in Texas. Do you have a sense, because I think this is another important part of the equation in states like yours and states like mine, where they're not the left coast wacky elitists, you know, the lefties that are nuts like AOC. We have some of those here. We have Cori Bush in Missouri. But you have,
right.
and I feel like I say this all the time, but I think it's important because my sense, and I even heard this last week from Joe Scarborough when he was talking about this, there are people who are probably even sometimes big lefties that don't like this at all, Ross. They don't want any part of it. They're afraid
That's
to
exactly
say
right.
that, but they don't want any part of this. And they're mad that their kids at private schools in particular are subject to this.
That's exactly right. And if you look at the national polling on this issue, they've only just started polling on it. We have like one poll out from Politico and Morning Consult. There are a bunch of other polls that have been run privately, haven't been made public. And they all say basically the same thing. So Republicans, of course, are overwhelmingly opposed to this ideology, which comes originally from communism. Independents are opposed to it 2-1, but about a quarter to a third of them are undecided because they just haven't heard of it. But once you educate them and you explain to them what it actually means, you know, that it's essentially a racist ideology that calls for dismantling racism and they oppose it overwhelmingly. Democrats, if you look at the national polling on this, less than 40% of Democrats are actually in favor of critical race theory. And as many as a quarter of them are completely undecided on it or have an opinion on it.
Well, and I think those quarter would come over to our side very, very easily. But this is also an important point. And I don't know what your advice would be. But I also think that, look, the left's going to play word games on this. Joy Reid has guests on. When she had Chris Rufo on, she's like, that is not critical race theory. So you can play games. I've said this. Is it intersectionality, critical race theory? I don't know what it's called, what you want to call it. It's wrong. And like you said, Ross, it's racist. But the left is going to continue to say, these are just people who do not want history and the truth. You heard Randy Weingarten last week, the truth about American history taught in classrooms. That's not what this is about. You know that. But they're going to keep saying it. So how do you effectively fight that?
You talk about what it's really about in the classroom. And this is why we're going to win. Because when you poll Americans all across the country, and I have in different school districts in a lot of different places around the country, red, blue, and purple, and you ask them not about the buzzwords of critical race theory or diversity, equity, inclusion, or any of these labels. You just ask them questions like, do you think that you have to discriminate against people by race in order to fix racism. And Americans say no, for the most part. Or if you ask them, I think that America is a racist country. It was founded on racist principles, and it's structurally racist today. They say no. Do you think that all whites are naturally oppressors and all blacks are naturally oppressed?
Right.
No.
Yeah.
You know, so when it comes down to the facts of what's actually being taught, the American people are really on our side. Republicans, Democrats, independents, whites, blacks, Hispanics, Asians, for the most part, everyone is on our side with regard to this because it's just simple anti-American ideology. So the reason why the left will fail is because they're just basically wrong on the facts of this, or on the wrong side of truth and on the wrong side of the American public opinion.
I think you're right. Absolutely. Ross, you know, a lot of times I'll interview a guest and I have this piece in front of me right now that we printed out and I'll toss it into the recycle bin, not because I don't like the piece, but because I'm done with it. Yours, and I'm being honest, I'm going to keep this one on my desk because I think it's a great guidebook moving forward for parents and school boards, and I'm going to recommend it. So thank you so much, and I'm sure we'll have you back because this fight is just beginning.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you having me on, Mark, and I hope you have a good afternoon.
Take care. Thank you.
You too. Bye.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
To get this guy on, Dave, who his name is Ben Gilbert, and he was an Amazon Prime subscriber, and then he started. I think he was very bored. He's like, "Wait a second, what if I keep track of what I spend and I don't have Amazon Prime? Will I actually spend more money or save more money?" He says that he canceled his subscription in 2020 and has had zero impact on order of speed or pricing.
But that's impressive to do in the year of the pandemic too, where a lot of people did a ton of spending on Amazon, myself included.
Right. But, you know, this is tough because he says he's saving the $120 annually on the membership fee. Maybe people should do this to see what the math works out. But I'm telling you, we order from Amazon certainly every week. I don't know about your family. And some of it's just stupid stuff. Like I needed shoelaces a couple of days ago. And honestly, and I like going to stores and I want to support local stores, believe me. But for something like that, you know, you go online, you Google, it comes right up. It costs like $2.50, and it's probably going to be at my door when I get home tonight.
Yeah, I've gotten dumb stuff like air filters sent to my house.
So he says, I've placed 15 orders for products delivered through Amazon. Last year, the order was 20. Well, I'm probably got 20 in 2 months, easily.
Oh, yeah.
At least 15 every 2 months. That would be an easy number for us. So he says, how much were my shipping costs? A grand total of $17.57 for 2020, a whopping $12.26. So basically he's saying you're not going to get hit for shipping very often anyway, which is interesting. You kind of wonder if you would do that, would it show you that you don't have to subscribe? Now, the other issue is you don't get the access to the shows. And I think that's something I would be concerned about. I have to have my,
if you get the free
Mrs.
shipping
Maisel
too.
And things like that.
If you get the free shipping, too, I guess if you're not a subscriber, it doesn't mean it's going to get there in 2 days, though.
No, that's true, right? May have to wait longer.
Yeah.
So he does address the issue of Prime Video. He says, frankly, we weren't using it. We were already paying for Netflix, Hulu, and HBO Max. Eh. I mean, I've kind of died off on, I think, some of the Prime shows just because there hasn't been anything fresh, but I still want to have it there. And then again, I pay for every stupid streaming service that you have out there, and it's a waste of money anyway.
Standby. Playback ready. Now, the audio cut of the day.
Well, Dave, we're gonna do a musical one this afternoon. And I gotta say, this is pretty good, actually. So, no people have heard this yet. Let's see if they can identify who's singing here. You might know the song. Kind of picking up on the beat here just a little bit. This is Dave Grohl and the Foo Fighters, or the DGs. Were you aware of this project until today?
No. I've always knew that Grohl's a big Bee Gees fan, but I was not aware he actually did covers like this, though.
So this is the first one that's released, and they have a special release coming out for Record Store Day that's going to have five different Bee Gees covered by the Bee Gees. So that is our audio cut of the day. I think Dave Grohl and the boys sound pretty good here. I will say this. You know, I'm a big Springsteen guy. When he was in Australia for his last tour, he opened one of the shows with this song, and it wasn't nearly as good as the Foo Fighters version. I'd also say this, Dave, because I think that you answered this question when I asked you a few minutes ago in the studio. If you have not watched the HBO doc on the Bee Gees, do it tonight.
Get more at 971talk.com.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up. And the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.